Welcome to Cranford Radio. My name is Bernie Wagenblast, and today I'm at Calvary Tabernacle in Cranford, and I'm joined by a couple of gentlemen who are involved with something very interesting. Charlie Cassisi and Joe Badiato are co-founders of GEC Communities. Why don't we start off with you, Charlie? Tell me, what is GEC Communities, please?
GEC Communities is a environmental company focused on the carbon credit market, particularly in saving. Our mission is to save rainforests. We have a country on the continent of Africa that we're engaged with right now, and our mission is to find a way to preserve the rainforest at the same time monetize an asset that has already been placed on their books, okay, by the sale of carbon credits, and then from the sale of the carbon credits to fold the revenue from that into assisting the indigenous people living there and raising their level of lifestyle.
Joe, explain to me, why is it important to save the rainforest?
Well, people are very much aware of the challenges we face in today's environment with respect to global warming or climate change, depending on how you want to ascribe it. The rainforest can be thought of as the sponge that absorbs carbon throughout the world. So it doesn't matter if a car or a person or a building generates carbon here in the United States. Anywhere in the world that this sponge exists will absorb it through photosynthesis. And effectively what photosynthesis is the absorption of carbon dioxide and expelling of oxygen that trees naturally do. Most importantly, though, the rainforest throughout the world is the single largest sponge in the world. But over the last 15 to 20 years, the rainforest has been being degraded and destroyed at an alarming rate, probably 1% to 2% per year, mostly through clear cutting of the forest, through concessions that have been granted by the countries that have the rainforest in order to generate income for the country. By our protecting the rainforest, we are able to generate something called a carbon credit, which basically is a form of currency that was created to allow entities or companies that generate carbon to offset their carbon footprint by protecting the rainforest and effectively monetizing those credits. So in our case, as Charlie mentioned earlier, we have been granted a very, very large block of the rainforest in this African nation that we are assisting the country in protecting by monetizing the carbon credits instead of having the logging companies cut the trees down and degrade the rainforest. In doing so, we will help the environment, have the money that we generate go back to the indigenous population in the form of building hospitals, schools, villages, or anything that the country's government deems appropriate. And we work hand in hand with the Office of the President, Office of the Governor, and the chieftains in the most local levels to determine what best use of the cash would be. And then we are charged with the actual deployment of it. We don't merely write a check to the country. Rather, we work collectively to identify the projects that will most efficiently and extendedly benefit the indigenous population, and then we actively pursue that.
In layman's terms, can you explain a little bit more about carbon credits? Who pays them? How are they paid? How does that whole system work?
Carbon credits, again, are a form of artificial currency, and the carbon credit itself was created as a result of the Kyoto Protocol back in the late 90s. And basically what it is a method by which you measure how much carbon is being ingested or not expelled by a particular situation, because credits can also be generated by businesses that generate power by methodologies that do not use a carbon footprint or generate a carbon footprint, like wind farms, solar fields, etc. But this currency is now something that gets transacted within the private sector. So as an example, let's say General Motors, through their natural form of business, has to create carbon. In other words, when they build a car, when their factories operate, it's impossible to make them totally carbon-free. So as they generate that carbon, many of these organizations have determined that they would voluntarily like to offset that carbon footprint. So that desire translates into them then saying, we will make a payment for an offset to our carbon footprint. That offset, in our instance, is the amount of carbon that is ingested by the trees. So think about 1 ton of carbon, and in I guess the simplest terms, let's say when you drive your car for 6 months of a year, you might generate 3 or 4 tons of carbon. So now if you want to make your car green, you would have the ability through our organization and several others that are existing to buy carbon credits at a price. In our case, it might be $9 a ton. And for, let's say, 6 months' time, for $30 or perhaps less, even as little as $20, you can totally offset your carbon footprint. And that money then gets used, as we described earlier, to facilitate a cash flow to the country that's protecting the rainforest, or we're protecting the rainforest for, and allows them to improve the lifestyle of the indigenous population. So if you think about it from another standpoint, instead of cutting the trees down to generate cash to support the country, we are actually protecting that rainforest to generate that same cash by selling those carbon credits to entities that want to offset their carbon footprint. For the most part today, that market is driven by on a voluntary basis. There are some compliance areas, such as California using the Climate Action Reserve, or Europe has some mandated offsets or methods by which to reduce carbon footprint for airlines and some industrial companies. But in general, the preponderance of the movement of carbon credits has been on the voluntary side, and it's a movement that is gaining traction. I'm sure everyone has heard of the Paris Accord that President Trump stepped away from, where many countries have agreed to reduce their carbon footprint. We might argue that that agreement, while very beneficial to the world, may not be the most efficient, and there's probably a very valid reason President Trump walked away from it. But having said that, it raised awareness around the world of the challenges we face environmentally, and whether one believes in global warming or climate change, the fact of the matter is carbon is increasing in the environment, and it might be because the rainforests are becoming smaller and therefore are absorbing less, or perhaps the population around the world is creating more carbon and therefore causing some warming effect. But regardless of whether or not you believe in the science of climate change, the fact of the matter is every day as we breathe, we ingest oxygen and we expel carbon dioxide. Or as a car runs, it generates carbon dioxide. Our primary methodology of existence today, by its very nature, creates a carbon footprint. And the primary methodology that the world cleans that carbon is through the photosynthesis of trees, soil, or any other green matter. And again, the fact that the rainforest on a worldwide basis is being degraded at such an alarming rate is causing the level of carbon dioxide to go up almost automatically for nothing more than the fact that there are less trees every day to allow it to be ingested.
Charlie, what you're doing involves one country in Africa, but obviously there are other countries in Africa where there are rainforests. In South America, you've got acres and acres of rainforests in countries like Brazil. Are there similar organizations to yours that are doing similar work in other countries?
Yeah, yes, there are. And just to qualify it for a second, Africa, this country in Africa that we have, which is the Democratic Republic of the Congo, is the first country. We have a list of about 7 of the countries that have contacted us and expressed an interest for us to start similar projects with them. They're on hold right now while we're getting the DRC up and running. But yeah, there are organizations out there that are attempting the same. The land masses they have aren't as large as the land mass that we're responsible for. And I must say that the paradigm of the deal that Joe was mentioning before in regard to us having fiduciary responsibility over the money is unique to our organization and the deal that we have. I mean, there was, I guess about 2 or 3 years ago, there was a Showtime special documentary on climate change. There was an excerpt there on Harrison Ford did in Indonesia. And it showed what could happen if this process isn't thought out properly. So you had the government signing over concessions to a private entity, but the checks for the monetization of carbon credits was being paid back to the government. I believe it had to do with palm tree plantations, and the indigenous people were actually suffering. They did not. You cannot tell people they can't clear a land to farm or to create coal without giving them a substitute as to how they're going to earn a living. And that's exactly where we come in. I mean, you know, we're going to be, when we're building in these regions, we're creating, not only creating housing and improving the environment for them, but we're creating jobs. And what we found in doing a study in this area, in talking to global ministries such as Habitat for Humanity and some other large architectural engineering firms that do pro bono work, we found out that a lot of these projects that were done in the past, so for example, Habitat for Humanity used to build in the DRC, but a year later, the village that they ran, they built, would just be overrun. And what they discovered was that there's not, if you don't change the mindset of the people, they don't know how to appreciate and really embrace what you've given them. So as a result of learning from those discussions, because we do control the cash on this, the purse strings on the projects, one of the things we're factoring into the budget is ways to financially incent the local population to maintain what we build at a certain level of status quo that would pass, let's say, monthly inspections. While that's going on, we're also building schools and working with the local population, developing education there, okay, that would change the mindset of the children growing up. Now, these are 25-year contracts that we have. So we're able to wait out a generation. So if we change the mindset of the young generation where there's an expectation that they're entitled to more than what they've seen in the past or what their parents and their ancestors have been accepted, they will then, growing up, embrace the new environment, and then it will begin to become self-fulfilling on their part, self-sustaining on their part. And that's a very critical component to the success of the projects. You know, we can build these beautiful villages and all we want, but if there's no change of mindset in those areas, those villages will be overrun in a year.
Joe and Charlie, you've known each other for several decades. You've worked on Wall Street. Tell me about your experience on Wall Street and how that's informed what you're doing today with this particular project.
Well, both Charlie and I worked in structured finance or asset oversight throughout our careers. And structured finance, at the most simplest terms, is a method by which to take an asset and create a cash flow out of it. So you might be most familiar with mortgage-backed securities, which is really where our expertise lies, where you use houses to create a cash flow for a bond so that the monthly payments that are collected from the homeowners generate monthly cash that allows the bond that was initially created to purchase all of those mortgages to be repaid over time. That general concept and some of the systems and analytics associated with that will be applied to the operations that Charlie and I will be utilizing. When I met Charlie quite some time ago, he was in an operational support area that used cutting-edge technology to take what was a very laborious mundane method of trying to track payments and measure results of certain asset classes. And he applied what were groundbreaking, what his organization applied, what were groundbreaking techniques to that. I, as a portfolio manager at the time, saw that and realized that it would give me a distinct advantage over the marketplace by having this timely information used in a way that had not been considered before. Segueing to our current situation, both Charlie and I, when we came across the carbon credit industry some 6-7 years ago, realized that it was a very disorganized method by which to oversee and or measure certain aspects of it. And it became obvious to us that the utilization of cutting-edge technology to what is, in our opinion, would be considered to be low-level oversight and or observation of the opportunity or the carbon credit market could be radically changed and enhanced and provide a better, number one, oversight, number two, for investors and or buyers of the carbon credits, a more clear view of what their investment looks like or where their money has gone, and a better method by which to track everything. I'm sure many people have heard quite recently the term Bitcoin and that whole cryptocurrency aspect of what's going on. The driver behind that is something called blockchain technology, and many Wall Street organizations are currently working with or beginning to implement the utilization of blockchain technology for a safe, secure, transparent method by which to manage data. We will be utilizing that same type of technology in our company. Several other carbon credit companies are beginning to do so and embrace it, but we're going to do it at what we believe, a much higher, more significant level. Additionally, we see the whole cryptocurrency phase where many of these assets are not backed by anything as an opportunity for us to create or to work with entities that are creating currencies physically backed by hard commodities, in this case carbon credits. So we believe that we're going to bring, as a result of our Wall Street backgrounds, a different view on how to number one, monetize the carbon credits, but number two, do it in the most efficient manner possible. One of the things that we're focusing on now, and I'll let Charlie touch on this in a moment, is how we can help to turn communities green in very short order. Additionally, we'll be working with universities to assist them in turning green. And of course, as we mentioned earlier, large companies. But we believe, or in fact know, because of the land mass that we control and opportunities we have in front of us, that we can do it at a much more cost-effective manner and transparent methodology than anyone else has done it before.
Charlie, he just led you into that that question, so I'll let you take it from here.
Joe and I are about to begin a series of meetings with the leaders of local townships here in New Jersey. Many of these townships have environmental committees in place, and they've begun to discuss and work out plans on how they can become green. So you may see plans come out where they're going to put local charging stations for electric cars to make it more conducive for people that have them. But here's the key. The cost factor in turning brick and mortar to green is excessive. I mean, if you were going to, in order to turn a building green, you'd literally probably have to raise it and then rebuild it on a LEED certified basis, which is extremely expensive. What we offer is an opportunity to help these communities become green basically overnight, if you want to think about it from that perspective. We can send our guys in to quantify, let's say we look at Cranford. You look at the municipal buildings here, the police station, you've got the town hall, you've got your schools, you've got your fire department, you've got your vehicles as well, both police and fire. We can quantify a really close estimate as to what the carbon footprint is for all the this equipment and these buildings. And in very short order and at a very low cost base, we can sell carbon credits to Cranford that would then turn everything green. They can now walk around understanding that they have offset. There's two things. One, they can publicize that they're green because they are, because they have offset for their carbon signature. Two, they're saving the environment by preserving a rainforest sitting down in the DRC. And three, and which is cannot be discounted, they are significantly helping a local indigenous population down in Africa in us building things, building infrastructure into that and improving their lifestyle. So it's a threefold benefit that can literally happen overnight. Now, that doesn't say that they need to abandon their current plans. What would happen is over time, no town will ever be 100% green on their plans alone. But what would happen is over time, as they introduce other things and let's say new technology comes in and they're starting to turn some of their buildings more efficiently towards green, it would reduce their carbon footprint, which means they would purchase less carbon credits. There'll always be a carbon signature unless they tear the building down and build a LEED certified building. And even that will have a carbon signature as well. You'll never be without one. So the best way to do this is to partner with carbon credits and their projects. And that's what we're actually beginning the process over the next week or two to begin having these meetings.
Charlie, one of the other hats you wear is you're an evangelical minister here at Calvary Tabernacle. How does that influence the type of work you're doing, or how does the type of work you're doing influence your ministry?
That's a good question. I mean, look, being a person of integrity is a critical aspect to any business that we do. That's how Joe and I actually became friends. He's a man of his word. He's a man of integrity. When I had Risk Management Group, he was one of my major clients, okay? And what he said he would do, you know, as far as portfolio was concerned, he did. And what I promised and committed to do, I did. And that's the same type of business and attitude that we take into this business. Obviously, there's a part in both our hearts that's really all about helping people. And the ability to change a generation, to impact the future of a country, to be able to raise a standard of living, so it's on par with other countries, is extremely attractive to us. You know, to be able to help a country that has an asset on its books but cannot gain any cash for it, suddenly be able to monetize and generate cash to improve itself is something that drives us as well. So you can't be an evangelical minister is what I do in my free time and loving people and doing things of that nature, but it never separates from who you are in your business world.
Well, I'm sure we've only scratched the surface with this interview, but people who want to get more information, there's a link that they'll find on CranfordRadio.com with this story where you can go to your site and get additional details. But right now, I'd like to thank Charlie Cassisi as well as Joe Battiato for taking the time to talk with me today on Cranford Radio. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Bert.
We'd like to thank you as well.